Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Wednesday, the 2nd of August. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link, wherever you are listening from. My name is Isaac Mugabe, your host.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura, with your social media comments.
Coming up on the program, the head of the European Union's Election Observer Mission in Kenya, Mariche Shake, tells DW that her team is ready to assess the situation of the country ahead of a highly contested presidential election next week.
Campaigns can get things heated, but it's important that there is also leadership and expectation management by the different political candidates to make sure elections that are going to be peaceful, credible and transparent.
The bodies of 12 Ugandan soldiers killed in an attack claimed by Al-Shabaab militants in southern Somalia have arrived in the capital, Kampala.
It's my dad who died, but I'm feeling a lot of pain because he had promised to come back on December.
And we are still waiting and reading your comments on Facebook page DW Africa.
That's correct indeed, Wanjiko. But before all that, let's first listen to what has been making headlines around the world.
This is Abubakar Jallo with the DW News. Car industry bosses have agreed to a request from national and state government on Wednesday to physically upgrade more than 5 million diesel vehicles. The early report came ahead of a press conference as auto sector delegates met top politicians in Germany to discuss action to reduce harmful diesel emissions. Spokesperson for the European Commission, Mina Andreeva, made this statement after the meeting.
We are also currently assessing the practical effects of a recommendation that we adopted in 2013 on collective redress for our German colleagues Muster and Sammelklagen. And on this basis, we will look at the experience gathered until the 26th of July 2017. That's the deadline set in the collective redress recommendation. And this assessment should be ready, in any case, before the end of the year. So we will factor in this assessment and in this review the diesel scandal consequences and the consumer, notably the consumer dimension.
Authorities in northern Nigeria say Boko Haram extremists have killed at least 7 people in an attack on a village where they burned houses and shops to the ground. Residents fleeing the area said fighters stormed Mildu village late on Tuesday. The community is not far from the Zambisa forest, which was a Boko Haram stronghold, before Nigeria's military announced it had regained control of the area late last year. Italian authorities have impounded a German NGO migrant rescue boat on suspicion of facilitating illegal immigration. The Uventa, operated by the Jugendrettet organization, was impounded on the Italian island of Lampedusa on the orders of an Italian prosecutor. After a lifetime of public service by the side of Queen Elizabeth II, the United Kingdom's Prince Philip is finally retiring at the age of 96. He is known for his frequent offensive quips at the expense of racial and cultural minorities. The Duke of Edinburgh has taken his first steps towards retirement with the last of his solo public engagements. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The Taliban have claimed responsibility for a suicide bomb attack earlier in the day on a NATO convoy in southern Afghanistan. Kari Yusuf Ahmadi, Taliban spokesman, said 2 armored tanks were destroyed and 15 foreign soldiers were killed in the attack on the outskirts of the city of Kandahar. These witnesses explained.
We were working on Afghan telecom cabling on the road and we had an explosion. When we went to check, we saw that a convoy of foreign forces had been targeted. 3 tanks were there and 1 tank was burning.
For more news and African stories, download the DW app on your mobile phone or subscribe to our Africa Link podcast available on your iOS or Android devices. I am Abubakar Jallo.
Welcome once again to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
With me, Wanjiku Mwaura.
The head of the European Union's election observer mission in Kenya, Mary Cheshekye, has said that it is no secret there are concerns about possible violence in next month's presidential election. Cheshekye warned that election violence would create a situation where everybody loses. Kenya, a decade ago, faced post-election violence that left more than 1,000 people dead and 600,000 displaced from their homes. DW's Annie Kwapameki spoke to her and she tells us more about her concerns ahead of the election next week.
There will be people who are not going to win the seats that they are now campaigning for. And that is a normal part of a democratic process as well. As people are campaigning to win, it is also important that people are prepared to lose and to graciously congratulate their opponents. Of course, campaigns can get things heated, but it's important that there is also leadership and expectation management by the different political candidates to make sure that people can cast their votes in elections that are going to be peaceful, credible, and transparent, because I'm convinced that that is what the vast majority of Kenyans want.
There has been lots of talk about possible attempts to manipulate the elections. An independent auditor has said that there might still be as much as 1 million dead people on the voters register. With all this going on, how do you rate the credibility of the upcoming elections?
So we look at every comment that is made and every point that is raised to us as the observer mission with a critical eye, and we assess whether there's validity in these points or not. My first statement, the preliminary statement of the EU election observation mission, can be expected a couple of days after the election.
So far, have you found any reason for concern?
The recent death of Mr. Musondo, who was responsible for the IEBC, the Electorals Commission ICT, is very concerning so close to the elections. So it is, of course, of great concern that all election officials should be able to do their work safely. So I've called on political candidates to explicitly and before the elections commit to the procedures and the courts that are there to be followed should there be any reason for them to challenge the outcome of the elections or any of the proceedings.
Mary Cheshekye, the head of the EU's election observer mission in Kenya.
Now, Isaac, talking about elections in Kenya, something that has been very prominent has been fake news. Something that we already saw with previous elections worldwide has finally gotten into its grip on the Kenyan elections just 6 days before the election period.
That's really absurd, yeah.
Absolutely. And we have a user from Kenya who texted us in a voice note and said this.
The only way to know fake news is that the news may contain a lot of grammatical errors, and it's a kind of news which is very short and does not have a background of it. So if I have news which does not have a background, I will automatically know that that news is fake news. This is Daniel Wanyama from Nairobi, Kenya.
Okay, that's one way, or his opinion of how we may know fake news. Tunde Saju says, fake news unlimited. Africa's do or dies and justifies the means election. Oh my, he explains.
And Dollar Bill says, desperate times call for desperate measures. Throw in anything negative towards your opponent, hoping it sticks.
Raymond Bola Brown from Lagos, Nigeria says, when a story is too far-fetched, a discerning mind will know that it's fake. Keep those comments coming and we will always read them here on Africa Link live whenever we can. Now, after meeting ministers and state governors, German automakers have offered to fit over 5 million diesel cars in the country with updated software to reduce nitrogen oxide emissions. Today's meeting came as officials and automakers faced the threat of possible bans on driving older diesel cars in some cities and questions over whether diesel as a technology has a future. The meeting brought together leading politicians with bosses from Volkswagen, Porsche, Audi, Mercedes, BMW, Opel, and Ford. Anja Kohler has more details about the meeting because she was there on the scene.
They only agreed upon fixing them with a software update, which is the cheapest solution for the automotive industry. It is highly doubtful if this will be sufficient, but this is what we know up to now. What is not clear is what is going to happen to all the other diesel vehicles, which can't be fixed with a software update, would need a hardware solution, which is far more expensive. But the politics have to show that they act up against this very powerful industry. So we'll see what comes out of it.
Oh, this is what they are offering. Has their offer been accepted as far as we know?
As far as we know, the offer has been accepted. And apart from that deal, apart from that software fix, they also agreed upon paying into a fund, a sustainable mobility fund. They want to promote other urban methods of transport, such as cycling and rail.
DW's Anya Kola. Wanjiko, any comment on that story?
Isaac Ihoza Godwin, writing in from Liberia, says, if great nations were to pull out of the climate change agreement because they know little about pollution effect on the universe, then every nation should follow Germany's footsteps and meet pollutants in their environment so as to tackle the release of carbon monoxide to the society.
Many thanks, Wanjiko. To Uganda now, where the bodies of 12 soldiers killed in an attack claimed by Al-Shabaab militants in southern Somalia have arrived in the capital, Kampala. The Al-Qaeda-linked insurgents ambushed Ugandan troops that are part of an African Union force as they patrolled a supply route in the hotly contested Lower Shabelle region. The AU mission, AMISOM said, an improvised explosive device, IED, was used in an ambush of a convoy composed of its troops and Somali forces. From Kampala, our contributor Frank Iga sent this report.
It was a somber mourn as the bodies of the fallen 12 Ugandan soldiers who died in Somalia were lowered one by one from a military plane. A military guard of honor was mounted in honor of the fallen soldiers. 18-year-old Agaru Agnes lost her father during the attack. She told me that her dreams have been shattered.
It's my dad who died, but I'm feeling a lot of pain because he had promised to come back on December so that next year I go back to school with my siblings. But he didn't make it.
The army spokesperson, Brigadier David Karemire, told DW that despite the death of the soldiers, the UPDF will continue with its mission in Somalia to bring back peace and stability in the war-torn country.
This has been a very dignified death, people dying in the service of our motherland, Africa. This is how men should die. The struggle continues. We are going to double our efforts to ensure that while we went to Somalia, us as the UPDF and indeed the AMISOM, we really ensure that our mission is accomplished.
DW contributor in Kampala, Frank Kiga, with that report. Wanjiko, this report, you know, it's absurd. You know, it's the second time that Ugandan troops are killed in Somalia. Anyway, what are people saying on our Facebook page?
Dides from Rwanda says, let me talk about Ugandan soldiers that have lost lives in peacekeeping missions. First, I wish them everlasting rest. Second, I consider them as heroes.
And Charles Ongole John, the club president of the Kumi Central DW Listeners Club, says, it is good to help a friend whose house is on fire. However, there should be welcome invitation and a limited time schedule on intervention. Where the owners of the burning house are either unwilling or accusing of the intervening party, it should always be logical to jump ship.
Okay. Quite thoughtful. We also have another comment here from Taban Asite from Arua, Uganda, who says, we appreciate the work of Uganda People's Defense Forces for the sacrifices they make so as to restore peace in Somalia. Rest in peace, our fallen soldiers.
Maide from Nigeria says, oh, the death of Ugandan soldiers is so painful. The region's union needs to reinforce their military cooperation with foreign military assistance to defeat Al-Shabaab as Nigerian militaries dealing with Boko Haram. We sympathize with Ugandan people. Now, Wanjiko, take me back to fake news. I see you are yearning to tell me more, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think this is something that everyone is talking about because people are getting messages on their phones or via WhatsApp or Facebook. Mm-hmm. And some of these messages are not verified. But some people think this could be the real source of news. Fune Cyprian from Cameroon says, please let's leave out fake news. There's no smoke without fire, says an African proverb. I live in the Anglophone crisis in Cameroon till date, and the best info on ground is from social media.
But Mumi Razak from Ghana says, whenever I come across a news item which I suspect to be fake, I check from some of the major news websites like DW. If it's not there, I consider it fake. Many
interesting
thanks, Razak.
Comments coming in.
Yeah. Anyway, keep those comments flowing and we'll always read them here on Africa Link live on air whenever we can. And just in case you're tuning in, this is DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe, your host.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, South Sudan's economy further slumps because of the ongoing conflict, forcing food prices spiraling out of control. Take a listen.
The money we are using is what we had saved for the future of our children. But now our children are dying.
We also asked you, how do you spot fake news? We'll be bringing you some of the answers that we've gotten. And in case you want to also contribute to this conversation, go over to our DW Africa Facebook page and leave your comment there. And maybe, Isaac, we have another chance to read more and more and more.
Definitely, definitely. But before all that, let's first go to Ghana, where the Electoral Commission has been hit by a leadership crisis with infighting going on between commissioners on one hand against its chairperson. She is being accused of financial mismanagement, among other malpractices. Commissioners have petitioned the country's Chief Justice to take action and sack her. Isaac Kalichi reports from Accra.
Ghana's Electoral Commission is credited for successfully organizing smooth elections since 1992, but that credibility is now under scrutiny. Some individuals have petitioned Ghana's President Akufo-Addo for the removal of the commission's chairperson, Charlotte Osei. They allege Osei is incompetent and guilty of financial mismanagement. The director of communications for the president, Eugene Ahin, says the buck does not stop with the president.
The president has no choice but to forward the petition to the Chief Justice, who would, if she decides there's a prima facie case against the chairperson of the Electoral Commission, is supposed to form a committee.
Charlotte Osei, through her lawyers, has denied the allegations, describing them as politically motivated. And she seems to have the backing of the opposition. National Democratic Congress, NDC, says the government and the ruling New Patriotic Party, NPP, are behind the latest move to remove the EC boss. Semolo Fosu-Ampofo is a leading member of NDC.
They have done it to several other heads of institutions before, during, and after Charlotte Osei was appointed. MPP leading members, go back and read the statements that they made. We are just sending the signal that it is dangerous for the future of this country.
The government has denied the claims, describing them as political and attempts to drag the president into the controversy. Eugene Ahin again.
We've made it clear that the president has no interest whatsoever in who is or who is not the chairperson of the Electoral Commission.
But that is not the only petition. Another petition sent to the president seeks to have two other commissioners who are at loggerheads with the EC boss to be sacked, an issue that is now worrying the leader of business in Ghana's parliament, Osei Che Mensah-Bonsu.
We should have a way to resolve the impasse there. Otherwise, it could blow out. This is what we are witnessing. As we speak now, there are matters that they should be doing, which they have not initiated any steps to do because of what is happening there.
Many people are eager on the effects of the current happenings in the electoral body. For them, it will be another testing moment for Ghana's democratic credentials.
Isaac Kalichi reporting from Accra. Now, Wanjiko, any story to deal with Ghana, our fans there will be more than willing to comment on our page. That's right, isn't it?
As usual, Daniel from Ghana says, the faceless petitioners have done well. Their boldness to petition the president, His Excellency Nana Akufo-Addo, has exposed the rot in their commission.
And Kafu Day says, are we mindful of Ghana's national interest as we delve daily into the inner workings of the Electoral Commission? Question.
While Timothy Bonfield says, what is happening at the Electoral Commission of Ghana is a clear indication that we have a very long way to go as a country. God help us.
We still have more to come in the next minutes, but first.
On the spot.
Now, the ongoing conflict in South Sudan has sent food prices spiraling out of control, leading to untold suffering among ordinary people. The war continues to weaken the country's economy further, pushing citizens to massive suffering. 1 year down the road, renewed conflicts in the capital, Juba, prices of goods and services have bitterly soared up. Wakil Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Jebel is one of the busiest markets in the capital, Juba. But as I walk around, evidence of economic hardships facing the country is clear. Many shops have closed it down. Few consumers are buying goods and the market is nearly empty. 46 years old Mary Jogo is a teacher in one of the government schools in Juba. She can hardly afford to meet her family basic needs. She says she has not received her salary for 5 months. Jogo was here at the Jebel market with at least 6,000 South Sudanese pounds in her pocket, an equivalent of $40. But she could not even manage to fill her small basket.
The money we are using is what we had saved for the future of our children. But now our children are dying. We are forced to withdraw the money. We have to get it out.
Jogo says government has not paid the teachers and many civil servants due to financial crisis. She earns $12 as her monthly salary. It's hardly enough to buy a 50 kilogram of flour, which now costs $51, down from $7 before the renewed conflict broke out in July last year. Prices of several basic commodities like sugar and soap have also showered up, doubling in prices. Traders complain it's the lack of access to hard currency, the U.S. dollars. Ibrahim Ali is now fearing his business may shut down due to low business.
Everything is increasing rapidly and very high. It is because of dollars. It's difficult to import the goods from Khartoum, Kenya, Dubai, and Kampala, or Egypt. It needs U.S. dollars, which is difficult to get. All these goods come from outside. If there is access to dollars, things would be fair.
Muhammad Ahmed is also a trader at the Jebel market.
The prices of the goods are determined with the access to dollars. If there is enough access to dollars, there can be many goods and the prices come down. But if there is difficulty in acquiring dollars, this means few commodities can be imported and the prices shoot up.
Government spokesman Michael Makwe says they have initiated a number of measures, including freezing taxes on food commodities.
The current looming economic situation and especially the hunger situation, it is worth mentioning that we are definitely suffering from a hunger gap.
As locals await government measures, many like Jogo have only to hope for better days.
Simon Wake with that report.
Living Planet Africa.
For Living Planet Africa this week, we head to Zimbabwe, where member countries of the Southern African Development Community, SADC, have started a 3-day emergency meeting to contain an outbreak of the highly pathogenic avian bird flu that is spread by migrating birds following their path through Southern Africa and exposing domestic poultry to the disease. The latest outbreak of avian bird flu has dealt a severe blow in a region that is struggling to recuperate from the effects of consecutive droughts. Just to remind you, in June this year, Zimbabwe indefinitely banned poultry products from South Africa, which had announced an outbreak of the flu. From Harare, Columbus Mavunga reports.
The 31-year-old Moses Julius Shibaya had dreamed to be a journalist, but due to lack of job opportunities, he turned a chicken farmer. Shibaya is already feeling the pinch of the outbreak of the highly pathogenic avian influenza. He says production costs of chickens have risen by about 30% since the epidemic in May.
And what is also worrying is that you can't purchase more birds or any bigger number due to the fears of that the birds might be attacked by the disease. So it's a worrying situation, and as farmers, we don't know what to do, but we encourage government to intervene so that the things get back to normal. We are likely to experience massive shortages of chickens in the near future.
For Zimbabwe, that is probably the least it wants. The country is recovering from 2 years of drought and a recent outbreak of armyworm that decimated the country's staple crop, maize. Dr. Unesu Ushewokunze Obatolu, Zimbabwe's chief veterinary officer, said her government was still to establish the extent to which the highly pathogenic avian influenza had hit the Southern African nation. She said the avian influenza might have been brought by migratory birds from Europe when Africa was in the summer season. In a telephone interview, Ushewokunze Obatolu said she was urging Zimbabwean farmers to minimize contact of domestic and wild birds to minimize the spread of the highly pathogenic avian influenza.
That is very dangerous. So we want to discourage, we want to reduce that so that we reduce all the chances of spreading virus. Although we have not picked it, but the chances are high that it could be happening elsewhere, and we are yet to pick it.
According to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, the first ever cases of highly pathogenic avian influenza, HPAI, have so far been confirmed in Zimbabwe, Democratic Republic of Congo, and South Africa. But for David Piri, the head of FAO in Southern Africa, the worry is that the outbreak of the virus might result in import restrictions of food from Southern African Development Community countries. That might affect the largely agro-based fragile economies of this region.
Full-blown outbreak would really be disastrous for Southern Africa. Poultry is the cheapest protein, and it is also an enterprise that many people, particularly women and youth, engage in for livelihood. So it would deprive a lot of the farmers engaged in chicken growing, not to mention the big commercial farms that would have been greatly affected. It is a notifiable disease, and once it breaks out, sometimes import restrictions are applied by other countries.
That report was by Columbus Mavunga. Now, my colleague here, Wanjiko Maura, has an extra story to tell from Zimbabwe. Wanjiko, over to you.
Absolutely. Donkeys are being put to different use in Zimbabwe. Today, police in South Africa blocked an attempt to smuggle a stolen luxury car into Zimbabwe using donkeys to pull it across the Limpopo River. Yeah. Police Brigadier Mojapelo says a Mercedes-Benz C220 was recovered on the riverbed. And Isaac, I can see you laughing, and I can understand why. Because when I saw this story, I thought to myself, how do they know which direction to go?
You mean the
how
donkeys?
Donkeys. But the suspects actually were around steering these donkeys, and they had put metal sheets under the wheels to make it easier to pull across the sand.
Wanjiko, I hope that's not fake news.
Absolutely not.
Let's hope you verified it. I mean, donkeys crossing borders, carrying cargo, and in this case, it's a Mercedes Benz. We're talking about class C220. Let's go back to the fake news. Yeah, hope that is not one of them. Anyway,
no.
Moses Mwangi from Kenya says it's difficult difficult to differentiate between the two causes. Even the media houses have been culprit of fake news. Confusing times.
And Kwasi Gaba from Ghana says, in order for me to know if a story is fake, I cross-check on other trusted media outlets to know if they have the story or not. If they don't have the story on their various platforms, be it on radio or internet, then I know the story is fake.
We really appreciate our fans for the fact that they're playing a role in telling us what they think about fake news. Please keep those comments flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we'll always read them right here live on air. Osman from Sierra Leone says, fake news helps to destroy a nation and stops people from seeing the reality that would help build them and their country as a whole.
And Harun from Kenya says, if the source of the news has proven to be unreliable and shady in the past, then it's likely peddling falsehood, or rather, fake news.
Olusoji Odemi from Nigeria says, every news or opinion on social media is suspect, especially critical moments. Detection rests on one's experience and rigorous fact-checking. Many thanks to all those who have sent your comments to us. Many thanks indeed. Continue doing so. And on behalf of the entire production crew with me behind the scenes, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
Wishing you a splendid day ahead.